Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. I have stated that I am an alcoholic. Are there any other alcoholics present? Exactly. Not to embarrass you, but in order that we may get to know you at the coffee break and after the meeting, are there any newcomers in their first week of sobriety? And if so, would you please raise your hand? You're welcome here. The heart of our program is contained in a portion of Chapter 5 of our big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. To those who are new, these pages may sound strange and unrelated to our specific problems. Do not be discouraged. Take what you can and file the rest for future reference. Tonight, I have asked Amanda to read a portion of Chapter 5.
I'm Amanda, I'm an alcoholic. How it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we cannot. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We ask his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "One order, I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought.
The format of this meeting is 30 minutes of participation, followed by a coffee break and a main speaker. If you participated last week, please decline from sharing this week so that others may have an opportunity to be called on. And I'd like to start the participation with Andy P.
Hi, Andy Alcoholic.
Hi.
If you're new, I really want to welcome you. If it didn't work, I wouldn't bother. I am 9 years, 9 months, and 27 days sober today, and I didn't really expect to be here that long or necessarily want to be here that long. But, you know, when I got to AA, my life was miserable. I had lost just about everything I had worked for. I was drinking, I was doing a lot of other things, and an arrest by the LAPD with enough to put me away for a while, you know, really woke me up. And, you know, with that, I, you know, decided to go to rehab. I thought that was the thing to do. I needed a vacation. And that vacation was kind of cut short when I got divorce papers from my wife, who also happened to be a district attorney, and didn't really like the fact that I was, you know, doing such illegal things in her presence and, or without her knowledge. And, by the time I got here, I wasn't happy to be here. I thought my life was over. I had been suicidal for 15 years prior to that, and I didn't see any change in that. So by the time I got here, I was already dead on the inside. I was just waiting for the outsides just to catch up. And I didn't really want to, I didn't think it was going to work. I made an agreement with my first sponsor, Oscar A., that I would do everything he asked for 1 year. And if it didn't work, we'd shake hands and part ways and everything would be cool. But I had to do everything he said. And I did everything he said. 7 meetings a week, 7 commitments, went to the yard, went to the moves, worked the steps, read the book, everything and anything that he asked. And at the end of that first year, I had to admit my life was better, just a little bit better. It wasn't, you know, amazing pink cloud stuff. It was just a little bit better, and I had to admit that. So I agreed to keep coming. And it's been that way for, you know, over 9 years now. And in those 9 years, I've been able to figure out what I want to do when I grow up. You know, learn how to be a responsible, you know, adult. Got remarried, something I didn't think I would ever want to do again. And I also went back to school and, you know, started one class at a time. And just did that. And I'm happy to say a couple weeks ago, I got my doctorate. And And I couldn't have done it without AA, because it got my head straight. It taught me how to live life and to live amongst, you know, these people we call normies, who don't really understand, you know, my sense of humor, and how to, you know, and how to go and when you take on a commitment, no matter how hard it is or how trying it is, just to keep doing it, because it's important when you start something, you finish it. And I have a lot of friends in this room. I would call Joni Walt every single morning on my way to school, and she'd always say, you know, one of these days, you're not going to sound so exhausted. One of these, you know, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a train. And, you know, it was great. And my sponsor, you know, Ian, he, you know, kept me on the path. He knew what I had to go through, and he knew that, you know, this is a goal that was set. And, you know, I got to say, without AA, it would never have happened. I would have never been able to do this on my own. I would have never been able to do this without the steps, without sponsors, without friends, without someone helping me along, because I couldn't do it by myself. And it's the same way for my drinking. I couldn't have done it by myself. And even though I finished, you know, what I set out for, it didn't fix me. I still would love to, you know, go out and party and have a drink like the rest of my classmates do. And I realized that, and I'm like, wow, that didn't really work. Well, I guess AA does. And that's it. Thank you.
Don't get your fingers anywhere near me. Ashley A.,
I'm Ashley. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for calling on me. I'm almost one. I'm really excited. Yay! Okay. Just wanted to get that out of the way. I just want to talk about, I guess, what's going on right now. I've been so up and down this whole week before this whole week, and I'm not one yet, so I'm still up and down. But I've been in Dallas this whole week. I went to Dallas on Monday, and I got back on Thursday, and one of my vendors is based out there, and so we had to go to this this biannual national sales meeting, and Dallas just so happens to be the city that I grew up in, and so, you know, I wasn't really keen on leaving town the week before I turned one, but I had to do it, and I wasn't able to get to any meetings the whole time I was there, and so I was pretty crazy, and you know, the whole time I was there, you know, every time I go home, I just totally think about all the stuff that I failed at, and you know, I just totally go into that, and but you know, it was really cool. I got back on Thursday, and I was able to go to Nina's watch, and you know, it was kind of weird. Like, it was one of the first times I had come back from being out of town where I really was like so excited to be back with my people, you know, and like where I really like felt like I was with my people. You know, I'm pretty much done with my inventory. I have like one more sitting, and it'll actually be done before my watch tomorrow, which is amazing. I'm actually going to be able to do that. And because of all that though, like I'm just totally, you know, I'm starting to realize that I'm not comfortable. I'm getting to a place where I'm not comfortable outside of these rooms right now at all. I mean, I'm pretty good at like, you know, functioning in a normal society, and you know, putting that face on just to blend in. But, you know, I'm really not comfortable anywhere except here. And I never thought that I could start getting comfortable here. You know, like, to me, that's like a miracle that I'm actually getting comfortable in AA. So that's kind of cool. And, that's all I have to share tonight. Thanks.
Thanks, Ashley. Kyle.
Kyle, alcoholic. Today, you know, everything is going pretty good in my life. I'm just at that point, man. I'm just so grateful that, you know, I wake up every day with a clean mind, and you know, I know what I did the night before. I don't know. I don't want to say on a pink cloud, but I'm kind of proud of myself, man, because 8 months for me is like a long time. You know, I picked up my first joint at 12, and ever since then, you know, I was, for the last 16 years, I've just been running, and alcohol at the end, you know, I didn't drink because I wanted to get drunk. I drank because, you know, I had to. If I didn't have a drink, I would sweat, shake, and I would start hearing voices after 3 days, man. And you know, it freaked me out, but, you know, I didn't think I could get to this point in my life. You know, I thought I would just have to manage the alcohol, you know, drink in the morning, maybe in the afternoon, and, you know, drink to pass out at night. But, today, with the help of a lot of you guys and, my sponsor, like, in specific, you know, I feel I can do this, and I feel, you know, there's some hope for me, and, hopefully you feel the same if you're new. Thanks.
Thank you, Kyle. Allie P.
Allie Alcoholic. Thanks for calling on me, Frank. Let's see. If you're new, when I got here, I didn't even want to stop drinking. I always want to tell new people that, because it said the only requirement was a desire to stop drinking. I thought, well, I don't want to stop drinking. But you know what I did want was not to feel like such a loser, a waste of oxygen. And I remember before getting into AA, I was talking to a therapist, and she was telling me to describe how I felt. And I told her, you know, when you're in a relationship and, like, there's still hope when one of you guys wants to work it out, but when neither of you guys want to work it out, you like know it's over. And she's like, yeah. And I go, that's how I feel about my relationship with myself, with life. And so when I got to AA, you know, alcohol had provided me with self-esteem and a reason to get up in the morning, and just it was my everything. And so the thought of like never, ever drinking was just so overwhelming, and was not one of the things I wanted when I got here. But I wanted a good life. And, you know, I was like the missed thing in high school and missed thing in college. And it was weird. Like all of a sudden I went from like socially drinking to blacking out to drinking every day. And I was about to be evicted and I didn't have any friends left. And because I had exhausted all those resources because of my shoplifting and my lying and my stealing. And, well, it's funny now, but it wasn't then. And, you know, and today, like someone else said, you know, I wouldn't be doing it still if it didn't work and if it didn't make me feel better. Because I'll tell you something. Like, you know, you can have the best man and you can have, like, the perfect size and you can make the best money. But if your head is not quiet, you can't enjoy any of that. You just can't. And that's what AA has done for me. It's slowly, and it still is very slow for me. But I'm committed and I'm willing, and that's what my sponsor says I need to be, to keep the head quiet and the stomach calm, you know? And that's what you say, Frank. And so I was like, oh, that's what someone else says. And so, you know, but I'll tell you right now, if I go and drink again, I'm not going to luck out and die. Oh, no. I am going to end up in prison. I will end up in prison embezzling, because I love to do that when I'm drinking, or end up in prison for killing someone drinking and driving, because I do that too. You know, so that's what would happen to me if I went to drink again. And if you knew, I wish you willingness. God, you know, you can talk to anyone who knew me when I got here a few years ago. I was not big on the watches. I was not big on the yard. I was not big on the 7 meetings. And forget, do you want me to sweep? What? You know, like, I was a sunset girl, and I wasn't working it, okay? I was going to the clubs in the list. Like, I mean, I was very, like, you know, but I'm so glad I had a sponsor who introduced me to consistency in AA, and because I'm still here, and I'm not just, like, here. I'm here, you know, the steps and God and commitments and doing the best to help others, because I'm one selfish person. I'll say it. No apologies. I am. And it's okay because I act contrary to that. That's why it's okay. And so if you're new, wish you willingness, and thank you.
Thanks, Allie. Ron W. I just called on you so I could see you do this.
Dick.
I'm Ron. I'm an alcoholic. Excuse me. I'm winded a little bit here. At least I didn't do it on a skateboard. Whoa. Welcome. I'm an alcoholic. I drank. Oh, look, I can put my foot up here. I used to drink. I drank a lot. I like to drink. I like to, like somebody said, I didn't drink to get drunk. I did. I drank to not remember. You know, I drank to quiet those voices. I drank to feel like me, you know. I didn't like who I was, you know. Shit, I had voices when I didn't drink. They all yelled at me most of the time. I didn't really do a whole lot when I drank. I'm starting to think about it, I watched TV, you know. I drove around. I delivered pizza. Luckily, it was in Virginia. I don't know anybody in Amends here for that. And I pretty much. I didn't have a life to begin with, so I didn't really lose that much. I got sober at 19, and I fell out of college, I guess, is something to lose. and I lost baseball. Lost all my friends, girlfriends, respect, trust, integrity, you know, all the stuff that, you know, people like during the day. And I liked what somebody said about, you know, I think people out there are still trying to get used to me. Because I fit in pretty well out there, kind of like a disguise. I've been here 10 years, so I've learned quite a bit, you know. I got a lot of friends who are normies. Half of them don't even know I'm in AA, and they think I'm a good guy. You know, they like, wow, you're so nice, and you're so smart, and you're so this and that. And I'm like, like, if you only knew what was going on in my head while you're talking to me, you know? It's bad, you know. I got a 73-year-old boss who smokes weed all day. I mean, that's his job, it seems like. And it's so much fun, you know, going in and talking to him after he's high, because it's just, I don't know how he does it. I couldn't do it. I could not have run a million-dollar corporation at all. I'd have smoked it all up, you know. You know, I drank. You know, it's funny. I went home a few weeks ago to my family, and I've already made amends to them. You know, direct amends, not the "Hey, I'm sorry" amends. It's like, no, the face-to-face with the dad amends were, it went really well, to say the least. You know, a couple tears here and there, and it was fun hanging out with him. Except that he's a normie drinker. I just don't, you know, he'll have a beer with dinner, and I'm like, is that it? You know, we hate steak. You gotta have at least two, you know, or three, or the case. And he just sits there and drinks a beer, and it confuses the hell out of me, you know? I'm not that way. If you're new, and you're trying to relate in here, you know, drinking's part of it in here, but a lot of it, it's, for me, I didn't really relate to the drinking. I couldn't listen in these meetings when I first got sober. You know, I just heard wonk, 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 wonk. Jail. Wonk, 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 wonk. You know, fired. I didn't hear a whole lot. But what I related to a lot was when people started talking about how they are today, you know, how they are with the crazy thoughts. You know, I love it when a guy who's got, you know, 30 years comes up and says, man, I felt like killing somebody today. And I'm like, yes, you know, like, I do too, you know. Anyway, you know, my life today is pretty good. It's been interesting with this foot thing. It slowed me down a lot, and I'm not one to appreciate stuff too much, but it's forcing me to. You know, I know, growing up, I consumed things. If I had one Twinkie, I'd have three, you know. If I watched TV, it was for like 8 hours. It wasn't like one show, you know. And now today, it's like, it's nice to be able to slow down, to make phone calls, listen to people, stuff like that. I don't know if I've missed anything in this yet. Oh, yeah, anyway, so where I'm at today is with this thing, I've had to have been taking a lot of Advil to try to get all this swelling down, and it's so weird because I don't really, you know, I don't take medication. I don't do anything like that. It's been weird putting, you know, anti-swelling stuff in my system. I'm like, oh, man, it's kind of like a small rush. It's freaking me out, and it's just Advil. It's like ibuprofen, you know? It's like I get sneaky with it, you know? I'm like, is anybody looking? You know, it's the weirdest thing. I'm like, this isn't, you know, and I've called my sponsor, and he's like, oh, you have to, you know. I'm like, okay. So if there's anything going on, that's pretty much it in my life. And there's a couple new guys I saw on the way in here. You know, it is Saturday night. There are a bunch of sports games and stuff, but you're in an AA meeting. That should tell you something, you know. If you don't think you're an alcoholic, you're in AA on a Saturday night. You know, come on. Thanks.
Yeah, hop on back, Ron. Florence?
I'm Florence. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, Frank, for calling on me. Frank and I have a special relationship. I like him from far. Anyway, if you're new, I would like to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous and let you know that it works. I made three today, so it does work. When I first got to this group, I gave myself about 30 days And then I was out of there, and, you know, 3 years later, I'm still here. And that's because I have a sponsor that believes in. I appreciate her well. Not that well in itself is such a bad thing. It's what comes after that actually freaks me out. So I resent not having to hear well. And, you know, I got here. I used to drink and do other stuff and live absolutely a great life. You know, I was downtown on Skid Row, seeing, you know, what we do every day and be okay with that because that's what I do, you know. It's not necessarily that I was raised like that. I went to private school. I have great parents. They're normies, and they did whatever it took for me to have a good life. I just am not really appreciative. I'm very selfish, self-centered, self-obsessed. It's all about me, what I can do for me, what you can do for me, how I can make you do whatever for me, you know, because that's what it takes. But I don't live like that today, you know. I can't, you know, I can't actually face life and be okay no matter what. You know, I have to understand my part and discard your part so that I can keep on doing what I'm supposed to do. I work step. I have a sponsor. PG is my home group. And if you're new, please stay. Get a sponsor. Get a big book. Get a directory. Get phone numbers. Make friends and life will be okay.
Thanks, Florence. Scott K.
Scott Kunitz, I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, Frank. God, I love drinking. My wife and I had a, we're kind of lucky. My mother-in-law has been in town, so we're able to get dinner sometimes early before we come to this meeting and went out to dinner tonight. And the last thing they asked us is, do we want orange slices and do we want plum wine on it? They said, no plum wine on our orange slices. And I looked at my Jane and I said, God, that, you know, that sounds like that would really taste good. And I stopped and think about it. I said, for that matter, plum wine might taste good on my bran cereal in the morning. And don't get me wrong, when I was drinking, I wasn't mixing with anything, you know, at the end. It was, you know, the vodka and I might have some beer with it, and that would be the way I would mix a drink. I would have said I was a social drinker. In fact, I lied to a lot of people and said I was a social drinker. I was smart enough to say, to have an idea that social drinking wasn't every night. So I told them I would drink, I told a couple of doctors that towards the end that I would have a you know, sometimes I'd go out for a drink or two on the weekends and that would be it. And reality was, is I was not able to go 12 hours without something inside of me. And I was drinking every day. And at the end, it wasn't anything glamorous. It wasn't out in bars. It wasn't nightclubs anymore. It was locked up in my bathroom with everything I needed to get through the night, you know. And then I'd stumble to my bed, you know, usually pop a pill and drink some more to try to go to sleep for 3 or 4 hours and get up and do everything again. And I totally understood what Andy said, you know. It no longer was fun. It was just what I had to do to survive, and it did felt like I was dead inside. And I walked into my first meeting, and I think I hadn't had a drink in 36 hours. And I walked into the Friday night men's stag, and I didn't want what you guys had. I just knew I didn't want what I had. And I didn't think what you guys said would work for me, but I was willing to give it a try because I really, you know, the honest thing is I wanted to be able to say, it didn't work for me. I tried and it didn't work. But I did everything that you guys told me to do. I looked up and it had been 3 weeks and I hadn't had a drink. And I had to go back something like 7 years or 8 years to find when I had gone 3 years without a, 3 weeks without a drink. And when I got to like 30 days, I knew the last time I had been 30 days without a drink, I think I was 14. You know? And I had some idea that this might start working. You know? I think I was probably 3 months sober before I really realized, oh wow, I actually am alcoholic. You know, I've been sober a little over 10 years, and I was telling someone tonight, my life is completely unrecognizable from the life I had when I walked in here. People trust me again. You know, I'm responsible. I know how to show up. I mean, I have kids, for God's sakes. You know, Jane and I have twin 3-year-olds. To the best of my ability, as often as possible, I'm trying to be a good dad. And I'm not, that wouldn't have been possible. You know, that and most of my life wouldn't have been possible when I walked in these doors. I couldn't be the person I am today, and for that I have all you to thank.
All right, please remain seated and quiet for this announcement. The speaker is Chris C.
Hi, everybody. My name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 5th, 1987. My home group is the West Portland Group in Portland, Oregon. And it's good to be here. I want to thank Mike for asking me to do this. Appreciate the opportunity to participate in my own recovery. A little bit of what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. I drank for 11 years, and for whatever reason, in that 11 years, my disease progressed very rapidly. In those 11 years, I was arrested 15 or 16 different times for alcohol-related arrests. I was in two different treatment centers. I was in detoxes. I was somebody who was a daily drinker the majority of my drinking career and ended up becoming a daily oblivion drinker. Was somebody that became unemployable and became everything that went along with daily oblivion drinking, I did. And just to give you guys a little bit of an idea of where my mind can still go today, a couple years ago I was speaking at a group, and before I went in to go in and talk, I was kind of going through the highlights or the low lights of my drinking, and I was kind of going through that list just like I just did, and I was like, okay, 15, 16 alcohol-related arrests, three DUIs, two treatment centers, put myself on ANA abuse for a while, you know, went right through the list, and then a little voice inside my mind said, you know, maybe you're not really an alcoholic. And I recoiled from that thought as if from a hot flame, but I got to tell you guys that at one time, that was the exact kind of thought that would get me drinking again. That obsession of the mind or that insanity that precedes the first drink, I would have a little thought like that. And it's like, yeah, you know, maybe I'm not. You know, I was 21 years old when I got sober, and, you know, maybe I was just kind of going through a phase. And I would, my mind would buy that, and I would drink again. I was somebody that when I wasn't drinking, I always felt different than everybody else. It felt kind of apart from, alienated from. I was hyper self-conscious and hypersensitive. I had a sense of impending doom and ultimately a sense of impending insanity. And a certain amount of alcohol gave me relief from that. 8 to 10 drinks made me feel like what I thought other people felt like normally. I was somebody without alcohol, I was afraid of people. If I was walking down the street and somebody was coming the other way, I would cross just so I wouldn't have to have eye contact with another human being. 8 to 10 drinks in me, though, you know, I could do anything. It was 8 to 10 drinks was a solution to my problem. So what allowed me to get out and participate in life and be amongst the earth people. And and the reality is that if it wasn't for that phenomenon of craving, see, the problem is that once I had 8 to 10 drinks in me, I would drink to excess. And in the beginning, it was on a fairly regular basis, and in the middle, it became on almost all the time, and in the end, it was all the time, and to where I drank to oblivion all the time. I was never able to achieve what those 8 to 10 drinks did for me. The reality is that if I was somebody that was able to stop at those 8 to 10 drinks today and maintain what they did, I never would have come to AA. I'd be out drinking my 8 to 10 drinks tonight. But I wasn't. I totally lost control of alcohol. Early in my drinking career, you know, early as a kid, I was drinking before school, I was drinking at school, I was drinking after school on a daily basis. I was kicked out of high school, I was a runaway. You know, and fast forwarding a little bit for in my drinking career, I was booted out of a private prep school in kind of a suburban Portland, and my father had come from a logging family in rural Oregon, and his thing was, you know, whatever you do, don't become a logger. You know, you go to get an education and so forth. And so when I was booted out of that prep school, you know, I became a logger. And and in the logging industry is full of professional alcoholics. And I right away stood out as a lush amongst a bunch of professionals. And logging allowed the type of drinking that I did, it made it acceptable. We worked, we drank, we wore the same clothes day in and day out. We would work, we'd get up, we'd catch the bus up into the mountains at about 3 a.m. get up there, work till about 2 in the afternoon, drink until the bars close, sleep for about an hour, sleep on the bus, and do it day in and day out. And I did that till I couldn't do it anymore. Ultimately, I got to a place where I was drinking to such a heavy extent I wasn't able to keep a job. In the fall of 1986, I had a conversation with myself where I was walking down the street. And by this time, I'd already had many attempts to try to control and enjoy my drinking or to quit altogether, and had failed repeatedly over and over again. And I thought, you know, I can't sink any lower than I already am here. And so I made a decision. I just said, you know what? I'm a drinker. I'm going to stop fighting this alcohol, and I'm just going to drink whenever I feel like drinking. I'm going to drink as much as I want to drink. And I'm essentially surrendered to alcohol. And for the next 3 weeks, I drank to unconsciousness or to blackout every night. And at the end of the 3 weeks, I thought to myself, you know, my God, am I ever going to be able to stop this? And my next thought was, I don't care. This is absolutely the happiest I've ever been in my life. You know, no job, drinking to unconsciousness on a daily basis. It was the first time I'd ever experienced freedom in my life. I've heard said that that alcoholism is the only fatal progressive disease that has a fun phase. And that was my fun phase. but it didn't last long. You know, like I said, I was somebody when I wasn't drinking, I just, like a lot of the participants said earlier, I had a mind that just would not shut off. And I was certain I was going insane. You know, that was my mantra, is there's got to be something wrong with me. You know, and so when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I heard somebody say, I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy. I was like, I understand that. I mean, that's the type of alcoholic I am. But that fun phase was short-lived, and soon the problems started mounting, and again, I started, again trying to control and enjoy my drinking, and I'd come to each morning full of the guilt and shame and remorse that I'd become accustomed to, and, you know, I'd have a plan for the day. Okay, here's how I'm not going to drink. You know, and I had all sorts of plans, you know, different types. You know, tonight I'm only going to drink, you know, I'm going to drink a glass of water in between each drink. That will be the solution. That I'll pace myself, you know. And the only thing that did is I wet the bed earlier in the night than I normally do. So in June of 1986, I came to one morning after one of those pitiful and incomprehensible demoralizing nights that we sometimes have, and I pieced the blackout together from the night before, and I got up and I was just like, oh God, I can't believe I did that. And so I was living in a little town in southern Oregon called Ashland, and I was from Portland, and I made the decision, I need to get out of Ashland, I need to wean myself off of alcohol, because by this time I was scared to death I'd go into the DTs whenever I'd come off alcohol. I was somebody, when I'd come off alcohol, somebody mentioned, one of the participants did, I'd hear, I'd be like walking down the street and I'd hear organ music playing behind me, and then I'd hear my name, Chris. I'd turn around and look and walk a little further and hear more organ music, and then I'd hear my name, Chris. I'd look around and nobody'd be there, and then it would dawn on me, it's like, oh, I have a hangover, you know, and I thought, I didn't know anything about alcohol withdrawal. I thought everybody that had a hangover had auditory hallucinations. It was just part of a regular hangover. But by this time, I'd started having symptoms of DT, so I was scared to death of that. So my plan was I was going to, you know, drink like 5 beers one night, and then 4 beers the next night, and 3 beers the next night, and then go cold turkey. And on the fourth night of this withdrawal plan, I got attacked in my bed by a rodent. And now the truth is I don't know if I hallucinated that rodent or if I dreamt that rodent, because I was so scared of hallucinations. And so when I came to the next day, or woke up the next day, I made it in my mind. I said, I must have dreamt that. So therefore, I'm probably not an alcoholic, because I didn't actually have DTs and hallucinate anything. It was just a dream. And that was the way my mind worked. Anyway, on the fifth day, I ended up coming apart and I ended up checking into a detox. Went in the detox. It kept me in the detox for 5 days, pumped me full of Librium, checked my blood pressure around the clock. And at the end of the 5 days, I was put into an inpatient treatment center. And when I was in the detox, there was guys that were far worse drinkers than I was that were coming in, seeing snakes come out of the wall, and being ejected out of the detox. And they were keeping me in there longer, and I thought, you know, what's going on? Why am I in here? You know, these guys are a lot older than I am and obviously a lot worse than I am, and yet they're keeping me pumped full of Librium in this hospital bed. And then it dawned on me. It's like the people behind this detox are conspiring against me to make me actually think that I'm worse than I really am. And then at the end of the detox, I had a physical, and they told me about the liver damage I had, and that, you know, that I was close to cirrhosis, or I was a couple years away from full blown cirrhosis if I kept drinking. And I listened to this from this physician, and I realized, you know, this is like the closer on a car lot. You know, she's come in to convince me that I'm a really bad alcoholic, so I'll check into the 28-day inpatient treatment center. And so, anyway, I dismissed the physical entirely, but I ended up staying for the 28 days. I was exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous at that time. And in the AA meetings that I went to through that treatment center, they were kind of these meetings where, you know, you just don't drink no matter what. You put the plug in the jug, and that's essentially all I heard. And I would sit out in the audience and think, you know, you don't understand, though. I don't like who I am when I'm not drinking. I need alcohol to become the person that I want to be, the person that I should be. I need alcohol. It's a solution. And so Alcoholics Anonymous did not become a solution for me, and I ended up drinking again. And I drank for a few more months, and I ended up taking a geographic up to Alaska, and I found this ad in this in the newspaper for a dry logging camp. It was an hour and a half float plane ride from the nearest tavern or liquor store, and so I went up there. I drank all the way up there. I got in a float plane, went out to Ketchikan, went to work for about 3 weeks. All went well until two timber fallers showed up with a bottle of whiskey. And they said, they were in my bunkhouse, and they said, "You want a drink?" And I said, you know, real quickly my mind went from, well, let's see, it's been 3 weeks. I haven't even craved alcohol. I haven't had the DTs or anything. I'm probably not really an alcoholic. Sure, I'll take a drink. And they handed me the bottle, and I tipped the bottle up, and I went gunk, gunk, gunk. And they grabbed it from me, and they said, "Hey, we got to make this last." And I had thought we were going to drink the bottle, and these guys had brought the bottle to, like, sip on. And so what happened to me is I had probably the equivalent of three straight shots of whiskey in me and nothing else to drink. And so that phenomenon of craving came on me, and I sat in that bunkhouse with, like, an itch that I couldn't scratch. I mean, I just came unglued that night. So the next morning I caught a float plane into Ketchikan, and and there's a bar in Ketchikan called the Fo'c'sle, which is nicknamed the Fo'c'sle Snake Pit. And it's a bar where the loggers and the fishermen all gather to drink and fight and knife each other and so forth. And and I went into the Fo'c'sle, and well, just give you an idea of what kind of bar it is. When you order a drink, if you order, say, Jim Beam's, they give you the bottle with a glass on top of the bottle. And so I went in there and I sat down and started drinking with this guy from camp, this guy named Dan, who was the nicest guy in the world until he had about five drinks in him. And all of a sudden he turned to me and said, "So you think you're pretty badass, don't you?" So I ended up in jail that night, to give you guys a little bit of an idea of how I was, and maybe to give myself a little humility also, when I got into jail, you know, I was a cop fighter, so I was fighting, and they threw me in. They hadn't given me my little orange jumpsuit yet, so I was naked, and they threw me into a cell with two other guys, and I was in and out of a blackout. But this, I remember this, and I remember thinking all of a sudden, I was like, you know, I'm in the middle of Alaska, women are in short supply, and I'm being thrown naked into a cell with two other guys. You know, I better do take some preventative action here. And so in my distorted mind, I thought this, what would be an action that would help this situation would be, I walked over to the concrete wall naked and punched it, and then dropped to the floor and did about 20 push-ups, then put my orange suit on and lay down on my bunk. And In my mind, I thought that it was going to circulate throughout this jail about this guy. You know, what a badass, you know, came into jail. When the reality was is that there was probably like, I mean, God, this flaming idiot came in and punched a wall naked, and, you know. But anyway, I passed out. I was on a lower bunk, and I passed out. And the next morning when I came to, the guy on the top bunk was hanging over looking at me. And I looked up at him, and I said, you know, can I help you? And he said, he goes, my name's such and such. He goes, I'm from Alcoholics Anonymous. I've got 30 days sober, and I'm in here doing 10 days of jail time that I owe. My sponsor made me come in and make amends and do this jail time. And I remember looking up at him thinking, you know, my God, I can't even get away from these people in here. And anyway, I was let out of jail that day. I came back down to the lower 48 and continued on my way, and was you know, drinking and trying not to drink. And this entered a period, this last year of my drinking was so full of despair. I desperately wanted not to drink, and I drank every day. And every day I'd come to and swear that I wouldn't drink that day, and I'd drink again. And it was the most lonely, miserable, desperate feeling I've ever felt in my life, and yet I did it day in and day out. January of 1986, I owed 8 days of jail time for my third DUI, and they were letting me do it on weekends. I'd check in on Friday, they'd let me go on Sunday. Between the third and the fourth weekend, on a Wednesday, I was arrested by the Ashland Police Department, and well, they took me aside, and these guys knew me on a first-name basis by this time, and they took me aside, and they said, you know, Chris, you've got a hell of a drinking problem. You've got to do something about your drinking. Go see this guy, Joe F. He's an expert on alcoholism. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll go see this guy, Joe F., you know. And so, anyway, the following day or the following couple of days, I was walking down the street, and there was one of these, in Ashland, there was one of these guys that stand on the corner with a Bible and read passages to, you know, anybody that happens to be wandering by. And I was coming by, and he read something, and I thought to myself, it seemed to relate to that going and seeing Joe F. about, you know, somehow. I don't know how, but, and I thought, God, if I was one of those AA people and there are no coincidences, you know, this is probably God, and I should actually go see this guy, Joe F. And I took a few more steps, and I thought to myself, you know, what if for once in my life I didn't dismiss this stuff as being stupid and trivial and actually acted on it, even though I don't believe in it? And so out of my own, almost out of my own amusement, I did. I went up and saw this guy, Joe F. And I went up and went into his office, and before they let me in, the secretary let me in, I was sitting out there, I was like, you know, please, anything but Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, tell me that you went through aversion therapy, 10 days, couple two-day follow-ups, and now your life's wonderful, you know. But when I got in there, he was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he does what we, you know, do. And he talked a little bit of what he used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. And at the end, he asked me if I wanted to go to a meeting with him. I didn't want to go to a meeting with him, but I felt a sense of obligation to go since I asked him for help. And I went to that meeting. It was a Thursday night Clay Street meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was actually a member of your guys' group that started that meeting. And I went in there, and I sat in the back, and I did what newcomers do. I raised my hand as a newcomer. And the speaker shared a little bit of what it used to be like, what happened, what it's like now. And I identified a little bit with the speaker, and then they called on participants the rest of the meeting. And each participant shared a little bit of their drinking history and what drove them into Alcoholics Anonymous and a little bit of how they got sober. And little by little, I started identifying with each of the people in there. And then there was this one guy, Frank, who stood up, and he talked about coming out of a blackout with a revolver in his mouth, then going into a blackout and coming to the next day on the floor with a revolver next to him. And that just gave me goosebumps because I had almost essentially that same story. I had come out of a blackout one time holding a carving knife to myself, had gone back into a blackout, and then came to the next day on the floor with the knife on the floor next to me. And the only difference between his story and my story is that I had also stabbed to death all the furniture in the house and broke every dish in the house. And I was a guest in that house. But that was one of my deep, dark secrets. That was something that I thought, this is not normal behavior. And I thought I may be one of the only people that's not institutionalized out behaving like this. And so when he said that, I mean, it just hit me at my core. Anyway, what happened is that night I had a sense of hope leaving that meeting. And the following day I didn't take a drink. Now, I didn't go back. I didn't do any of the actions that they had suggested. And so I ended up drinking again. February 4th of 1987, that was on January 29th, that meeting. On February 4th of 1987, I went out one more time to prove that I could drink, or that I may be an alcoholic, but I'm not an alcoholic like you guys. And my plan was, is that I was going to go out, drink 10 drinks, shut it down by about 10 or 11 o'clock that night, come home, go to bed, get up the next morning, be like a regular person. The guy that was supposed to pick me up to take me down to the bars was running late. I drank 9 beers in my living room waiting for him to come pick me up. So I pretty much blew my plan before I even headed to the bars. Went down to one bar. I started drinking vodka Collins at that bar. I remember I was in and out, starting to go fade in and out of a blackout. I had one hand over one eye. I was drinking vodka Collins. And then I ended up over at another bar, which was my drinking establishment. And I sat down at that bar, and I remember having a conversation with the bartender. I had one of those like light bulb ideas where I was sitting there and I thought, you know, maybe if I became a bartender, then I could just, you know, work and drink and I wouldn't get into trouble. I could just, you know, kind of work and drink and walk back and forth to this bar and I wouldn't have all the trouble I'm having. So I talked to this bartender, his name was Cliff, and he assured me I was a shoe-in for the job. And then I slipped into a blackout, and this is what was told to me that had happened later. But apparently later I had assaulted some people, and he came over and cut me off. And so I drug him across the bar, and I was going to work him over, you know, my new employer. And anyway, the police were called, and I ended up in a position that I was familiar with. I was running through people's backyards, you know, over fences, through a backyard, over a fence, through a backyard. And they had two cars chasing me around. And I ended up getting stuck between two streets, so I laid down behind some bushes. And apparently I passed out while I was laying there, because the next thing I remember is the police, you know, gently nudging me with their toes. And they, you know, got me to and on my feet. And I remember I was standing by the police car. And this night was nothing. This was not a big deal of a night. I mean, this is ordinary stuff. I mean, I have the nights where, you know, I was in jail one time. I got drunk in the morning, was arrested in the morning. I tried to hang myself from the toilet that morning, was released, and was drinking that afternoon. This was not a big deal for me. But something internally happened that night, and I recognized it in the drunkenness. I just couldn't continue doing this. And they hadn't cuffed me at this point, and my thought was, you know, grab his revolver, shoot him, and flee. And my next thought was, no, you know what? I get caught doing everything I do, I get caught and arrested for. Grab the revolver and shoot myself, because I can't keep doing this. And before I was able to act on that, they'd cuffed me, put me in the car, taken me down, you know, booked me and so forth. Later in the night or in the morning at some point, they took me home. And my last conscious thought before I passed out was, I wonder if I'm going to feel this way in the morning, because something had shifted internally. Something was different. And nothing changed. I felt exactly that same way in the morning. In the morning, I was beaten. Death was a more attractive alternative than continue to live the way I was living. Had I had a crystal ball that morning that said if I would have drank for another, you know, 30 or 90 days, I'd be dead at the end of that 30 or 90 days, I would have drank myself to death. My fear is that I was going to continue to live. I was going to live another year or another 5 years or another 10 years and continue to spiral down this miserable existence of a life that I was living. And I cried out to a God that morning that I didn't necessarily believe in. I said, God, please make this stop or kill me. And that's when I became willing to do what Alcoholics Anonymous had said. I didn't want to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. The God thing scared me. But the thing is when I came to AA, you know, the group that I belonged to said, you know, you don't, you know, fake it till you make it. You know, in the chapter We Agnostics, all it says is a willingness to believe is all that's necessary to make a start. One guy put it a way that I really liked. He said that you don't have to believe in God to make a start in this program. You just have to take actions as if you believe in God. And so little by little, I started doing the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a sponsor. I got service commitments. I got a big book, started reading the big book, started going to meetings each day. And I was staying sober. The obsession to drink was removed immediately for me. On February 4th of 1987, I was somebody who, you know, who lived with an obsession to drink. On February 5th of 1987, it was removed. All went well until I was 44 days sober, and then I had an anxiety attack at 44 days sober, and I ended up in the hospital. Now, I'd never had an anxiety attack before. I mean, I just, you know, I thought I was going crazy or having a heart attack or both or, you know, something. And I ended up in this hospital, and luckily the group that I belonged to had warned me about doctors, and they had said, you know, be careful, because doctors have recently discovered that alcoholism is caused by a Valium deficiency. And so when I got in there, of course, they did offer me Valium, and I declined taking it. And I got out of there, and I immersed myself in AA, but I wasn't working the steps. I'd worked the first three steps, but I hadn't done a fourth or fifth step yet. And in one respect, I was getting better. But in another respect, I was getting worse. I was, you know, I had been plagued with anxiety and depression. I was being plagued with, you know, fear of people. And on the other hand, I seemed to be forming some sort of relationship with a higher power that I didn't understand, and I wasn't drinking. By the time I was 9 months sober, I was, you know, I was coming apart, you know, in my own skin. I couldn't take it anymore. I didn't want to drink, but I couldn't live the way I was living either. And just to give you guys an example of the state I was in, I was taking a psychology class at this time, and in the psychology class they gave us one of these stress tests, and it was kind of like a shortened version of an MMPI. And we self-graded, and since I was an AA, was honest, and I graded it. And at the end of the class, the professor was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He had about 3 years sober. And at the end of the class, or at the end of the grading of the exam, he said, you know, who in this class scored between 0 and 25? And there was about five people in this auditorium-type class that said, you know, raise their hand, they scored between 0 and 25. And he said, you guys process stress very well. You know, stress bounces off you like water off a duck. Who scored between 25 and 50? The majority of the class raised their hand, and he said, you guys process stress, you know, average. You know, that's, you know, just, you know, like an average person. Who scored between 50 and 75? And there was about 5 or 10 people. And he said, you people have gone through some sort of stressful event, you know, like a divorce or a loss of somebody recently, and or you just don't process stress very well. Who scored between 75 and 100, or 100 to 125? Nobody. Anybody over 125? Nobody. Well, I had scored 146 on this exam, and the professor said, you know, I didn't think anybody would score above 125, because usually people that score above 125 are institutionalized or in penitentiaries. So this concerned me, and after the class, I went down and I went up to him and I said, you know, doctor, I said, I scored 146 on this exam. And he said, he goes, you know, he goes, Chris, he goes, anybody in their first year of sobriety would score above 125. He goes, what you have is untreated alcoholism. Do your fourth step. And I soon after that, I procrastinated for a while, because, you know, in my mind, that can't be it, you know. But I got to a place where I just couldn't take it, and I hit a bottom in sobriety. And I made a decision that I was going to do this fourth step, I was going to do the fifth step, six, seven, up through step 12, and if I still felt the way I felt at step 12, I was going to commit suicide. So I wrote this fourth step, and got together with my sponsor, and one of the things he did for me that I'm really grateful for is that when we sat down to read my fourth step to him, he shared his deep, dark secrets to me. And right off the bat, the magic of that fifth step process started. You know, there was that identification. I was all of a sudden not alone with the things that I had done. And I shared this fifth step with him, and after I'd done the fifth step, I had gone into the restroom. And one of the things that I'd been doing for some time when I wasn't drinking is I would look at myself in the mirror, and somewhere out of my soul, I would have this thing where I would just tear myself down and say, you know, this is what's wrong with me. 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 Or I would build myself up. I'd look at myself in the mirror. I'd build myself up and say, this is what's right with me. This is what's right with me. This is what's right with me. But that was fleeting. About a minute after that, I would say, you know, I'd sink back down in my soul and say, nah, a piece of crap. And And after I did that fifth step, I went in and I turned to the mirror to do my normal routine, and I sat there and I stared at myself in my eyes, and I had no reaction. And I was thinking, you know, what is this? What is this? What is this sensation that I'm having? And all of a sudden, it dawned on me. It was comfort. And it was the first time in my entire life that I'd ever been comfortable in my own skin without having a certain amount of alcohol in my system. And that's really where I became a believer in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's been my reaction to life since then. I immediately did 6 and 7, and I got into making the amends, and then early on got into carrying the message and gotten very active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I went from somebody who, you know, could not function in society to at 2.5 years sober, I got into the stock brokerage business. By the time I was 5 years sober, I ended up owning half of a brokerage firm. At 5 years sober, I got married to the woman that I always wanted to get married to. It was all as a result of taking actions that seemingly had no relationship to what my problem or issue was. You know, I didn't get the woman I always wanted by constantly trying to get the woman I wanted. Somehow in the midst of making amends and practicing step 10 and 11 and carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to the newcomer, my life just unfolded and things started happening in my life. And, you know, today I've been married for 15 years. My wife's a very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and neither one of us know the first thing about a relationship. My solution to a relationship is to have a service commitment. My solution to relationship issues are to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I believe that either this program works or it doesn't work, and that God is either everything or he's nothing, and that through taking these actions, you know, God will do for me what I can't do for myself, and I cannot live this life of myself. You know, I'm not somebody that can live in the real world. The real world gets me drunk. I'm somebody that has to live in the realm of the spirit, and, you know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything I am today, the way I perceive life, the way that I interpret life, the way I feel as a result of taking actions that still today seemingly have no relationship to what I'm going through in my life today. Alcoholics Anonymous didn't give me my life back. It gave me a life. And, you know, in closing, I'll just say something that I heard Chuck Chamberlain say on a tape once, and it's true for me, and that is, you know, I have two choices today. I can live a self-centered life and suffer the consequences, or I can live a God-centered life and suffer the consequences. Thanks for my sobriety.
Meeting, we define birthdays as 365 days of continuous sobriety from anything which affects you from the neck up. If you're a regular attender and wish to take a cake, please see me at the door before the meeting. Tonight we have 4 birthdays. Let's sing briskly and speak briefly. Our first birthday is for 2 years for Melissa. Happy birthday to you.
Make it quick. Melissa, alcoholic. That's my family. That's from San Diego. And I really appreciate them, that they came down and they support me. I love them very much. And first most, I would always like to thank my mom, and she's passed away. It's now 2 years, and I dedicate this cake to her, and I love her dearly, and I also want to thank most specially is my stepfather, and he's now 22 days sober, and And I thank you guys, mostly. You know, without you guys, he comes to these meetings and you guys support him. And I really want to thank you guys all for my sobriety. I love you guys.
Happy birthday. Our next birthday is for Guy P. for 20 years. Happy birthday to you. Guy alcoholic.
Wow, that's loud. I'm one of the lucky ones that the first speaker I heard in AA was Frank Jones. He's a 10-minute speaker at the big meeting. That was a piece of luck because I said, if he can do it, chances are I might be able to do it, you know. God bless you, Frank. Those are my kids, Christina and Michael. Came all the way here from Los Angeles. they're good ones. Smart kids couldn't be more different from me if they got paid. Christina's a second grade teacher. She's a writer of children's, an unpublished as of yet writer of children's books. And Michael's a financial analyst, and he helps people for free. He was thinking I'd berate him for it. I said, no, man, do it. That ain't that easy. I have to quit, Frank. Huh? Okay. I gotta quit. Boss will break my neck. Love you all. God bless.
Birthday guy. And our next birthday is for 21 years for Lara G. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, dear Lara. Happy birthday to
Lara Graff, alcoholic.
Lara.
That's my family. The little one, if you don't know, that's Jack Graff. He's 3 months old, and I just really want to be a good sober mom to him. The beautiful young lady is my stepdaughter, Mary, and she is a good girl. She helped me out so much when I was pregnant and had a couple times that were a little bit dicey, and she just sat with me and you know, she would remind me when I was walking out the door not to, like, trip. And she's a great big sister. She just adores him. And I can't tell you what a blessing that is to have. And I adore her, and I'm so grateful she's in my life. And last but not least is my husband, John. And most of you know John. He's a great AA member. He puts AA first. He puts AA first in our house, and he helps out so many people. And he's a great husband. He provides very well for our family, and I have so much respect for him. And he's a sweet, loving father, and he's a wonderful, wonderful husband. And I'm grateful to have all of them in my lives. Thank you.
Happy birthday. And our last birthday is for 26 years for Z. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Z. Happy birthday to you.
demons or alcoholic. Ah, I want to first thank this meeting and all the people that really make sure this meeting Saturday night goes on. I didn't always like coming here, but I really am so happy that it's still here. I want to thank those ladies, Paulette and Gwen, and also Gwen, for the cake. And I want to thank Bea, who couldn't be here tonight. She's not well tonight. I communicate with those ladies all the time, and we have a lot of conversation about life and what we walk through. And I'm able to share some of my experiences, and they help me just know that I am an alcoholic, and I have gone through and gotten through so many tremendous things by the help and the information that I can give to other people so that I can get better and that I can share with other people. So we have a wonderful family kind of rarely seen camaraderie here in this group, no matter what. And I am really grateful for that, and this meeting kind of exudes that kind of thing. So I want to thank everybody at Saturday night, and I want to thank all of you for my sobriety.
Happy birthday. Special announcement.